coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. And Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border.
Welcome to Racing Across America on this Thursday morning. I'm Seth Merrick here in Saratoga. If you're planning a trip to the track, you will enjoy Thursday afternoon, and we'll talk some Thursday afternoon racing in just a few. We'll have Dave Grenning a little bit later looking at some of the stakes coming up Friday, the Curlin, and over the weekend some stakes including the Jim Dandy. We'll also talk to Anthony Marmino, who has a Del Mar blog on the Capital TV website now, so we'll get some of his impressions over the first couple of weeks of racing out on the West Coast. But let's start out talking Saratoga on this Thursday afternoon, because the opener today, the Grade 1 Smithwick, and with four horses in, top jump trainer in 2019 and multiple leading trainer in previous years, Jack Fisher. Jack, good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming over. We appreciate it. And we'll talk a little Smithwick and your horses in a few, but as always when I get folks in, I like to introduce to the audience that they may not be familiar with your background or whatnot, and reading a little bit of bio information, it seems like you got into the game with family connections.
Yeah, my dad trained, he trained jumpers first and then just basically flat horses. He started the Pier Hill Training Center.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just because, you know, in the local area, he was trained at Park, or you know, Philadelphia Park then, and
yeah,
didn't really like that, so. And it's just, you know, Bear Hill to me is a great place to train a horse, which other people have figured out too.
Yeah, it's become a base for some major trainers, and it's so centrally located. You can start there and kind of fan out to all the East Coast tracks.
Exactly.
And they have the option of the different surfaces as well. So, yeah, that's interesting. That was the start. I also read you started your career as a rider, and a rider in timber races. Explain the timber races to people.
So timber racing, over here we have the hurdles that you see up here, but they also have timber races, which are solid board fences or post and rail fences. And they started out generally because that's what people fox hunted over. So it started out that way. And I was lucky that, you know, I started riding races when I was 16. And my first horse was a horse named Juggernaut that was horse of the year before I rode him, so I thought I was really good.
Talk a little bit about the riding career. How long did it last?
Probably longer than it should have. But, yeah, I was very lucky in the riding career that you realize later that it was all the horse. That, you know, I had Juggernaut, then I had some other good horses. I had a horse named Saluda that won like six Virginia Gold Cups in a row. I had some really nice horses, which really helped.
And does that experience benefit, I assume, benefits being a trainer?
I think being a trainer, that you get that hands-on instead of just, you know, again, doing those horses, you learn everything about doing horses instead of just coming on, getting on horses and leaving.
Again, reading some of the bio information, I was laughing last night. Do you still get on horses? And one of the quotes I read was, Jack doesn't always wear the helmet, but when he puts the helmet on, watch out.
Well, funny, yeah, I do. I, you know, at home I get on like seven sets a day. But I don't school anymore. I schooled one horse last year just over the rolls, which are the, you know, the foam things in front. And I did put a helmet on. I don't wear a helmet at home because in the old days we never wore helmets. And so I just don't. And I'm not insured by my workman's comp, so it doesn't make any difference. And I had a fall and knocked myself out.
So
I blame it on the helmet.
You've kind of alluded to it. Talk a little bit about, because you know, we redid PP's, and you don't see a lot of training lines for steeplechase horses, and obviously it's different. Talk a little bit about the difference between, you know, that we're used to as handicappers. You see the 4 furlong, the 5 furlong workout, which are on the main track, or a facility like Saratoga, you have the training track, the Oklahoma. But what's the training regimen for jumpers?
So for me, it's basically the same as the fly. I train pod horses too, but at home, I have a poly track. We have turf gallops too, and we're just not putting the times in. And you know, again, I don't think the times mean that we work slow works at home, because I think they stay sounder longer than me putting the fast work in. And even with the flat horses, I don't put fast works in.
Talk a little bit about the jumps. Is that part of the training regimen between jump races? Do you have to get them over the jumps training just to keep them sharp?
Well, I go back to, I had a horse named Woody Boy Wood that was a good horse a while ago, and we changed him to a timber horse, but that didn't work out. So I ran him back over hurdles, and I ran him in a stake down south, and he won. But going into it, I realized I hadn't schooled the horse before that. He hadn't seen a hurdle in a year and a half or 2 years. And it didn't, you know, it's kind of, like horses I get that I'll run back on the flat, gate work. Once they're fine. I mean, you know, they figured it out. It's like riding a bicycle.
How do you, though, and I'm assuming, because I know that's a good second career for some of the thoroughbreds who raced on the flat to move to the steeplechase, so I assume you've had that. How do you then take them and teach them to go over the jumps?
Well, I get a fair number of horses that, you know, expensive horses, too, that's only, you know, $700,000 mm-hmm. yearlings that are, you know, let's try something different. And, again, to me, it brings out, and it works for the flat horse, too, that, you know, they go out, they get turned out, all my horses get turned out for like an hour or 2 hours a day, that I have like probably 50 logs in the woods that they jump through, and it's just, you know, they like the variety instead of just doing the same thing every day.
So they're jumping on their own?
No, they got to ride, but when you do it in the woods, there are trees on each side, so they really don't have a choice about what you're going to do here, got to go over instead of like, let's go over there instead.
Talk a little bit about, we had Bill Gallo in yesterday from the National Steeplechase Association, and talked about the various meets around the country. Talk a little bit about that and the travel involved with being a steeplechase trainer.
The good thing about steeplechase racing to me is, number one, when I enter a horse, the race goes. That's what the one thing that drives me nuts on the flat. Yeah. It's entering the horse 7 times and they don't get in or whatever. The race goes. The traveling, I think the traveling is great because it takes you to a lot of places that, you know, it's fun to go and go to. You know, Kentucky Downs for me on the flat. I love going down to Kentucky Downs. I like staying in Nashville for the week.
And we watched some Nashville races yesterday on the show, including the Iroquois. We'll watch that in a few minutes, too, talking about one of your horses also. But we were talking before we went on the air, Colonial Downs adds some steeplechase races in their inaugural restart this year. Monmouth has some steeplechase races, Belmont here at Saratoga. But we were talking yesterday as well about people may not be familiar with some of these meets where no betting, but boy, it looks like it's a great social atmosphere. It's something like Iroquois.
Iroquois, I don't know how many people they have, you know, 30, 50,000 people, and everybody gets dressed up. You know, for me, the girls look great.
I said yesterday, load up the back end with some food and maybe some beverages, and wear a big hat.
They have closer to here is Far Hills, New Jersey, and they put on a show there. And you know, as far as for turf courses, I mean, the turf is unbelievable.
And they added betting there last year.
Yeah.
So we were talking about that yesterday, about 3 hours from here, and that's something that I have to put on my list. I haven't been yet, and looking forward to it. Up here at Saratoga, where is your training facility? Describe that a little bit.
So my training facility is just north of Baltimore. It's like 20 miles or 15 miles north of Baltimore. Maybe 10 years ago, I put in a poly track. We have a 7/8 poly track, but it's different. It's more of a European style. It goes along the bottom. It's a dog leg up a hill.
Okay.
Again, so I don't have to go as fast with them as they're going up a hill. Again, you're putting less stress on the front legs. And we have about the same as turf gals, and we do it like a European. We keep moving over, so we have new turf all the time. We fix what we just tore up.
And with the schedule up here, mostly Wednesdays, some Thursdays, I'm assuming your game plan is to ship in and then go back home.
I used to take like four or five stalls up, and I'd change every week horses up here. Now I'm just shipping into the receiving barn, which seems to be we want to race on Sunday, so that worked out well. And, you know, I think it works out pretty well.
Well, what's your favorite venue?
Up here.
Okay. And is part of it just you're in front of the crowd? And I always say, I mean, I'm sure some of these hunt meets are the same way. But up here, I talk about on the flat, certainly, but I think with the jumpers as well, big crowd and really knowledgeable about the game.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's fun to run and win in front of that kind of crowd.
And the other thing is some of the bettors that really know do well, and they come and say, that was great today, you know.
Which certainly helps. And I advise people, I will mention it again, on the Steeplechase site, if you go to the National Steeplechase Association website, you can pull up the archives of all the videos if you want some trip notes. And as I say, trip notes can be important in the jump game. Let's get to it and talk a little bit about the AP Smithwick today. You have four in. All four are going to go?
All four are going to go.
Let's kind of plow through them one by one here. And yesterday I showed some video. I'll show it again today from Von Romanet. And I'm guessing the S is silent. At least that's the way they were calling it.
I haven't learned how to pronounce it, but I think you are correct. And I did look it up on Googled it. And it is the most expensive wine in the world.
Ah, there we go. And as I say, I pulled up a race from Ascot last year. We'll see Von Romanet. And as I say, the announcer was pronouncing it that way. Von Romanet. But they take jump racing so seriously over there. I always give an extra look to these horses coming over from Europe. You'll see, he's gutsy here. Kind of gets challenged late, but holds on. Your thoughts this afternoon for Von Romanet.
So Von Romanet, there's a trainer over there named Richard Newman, who's one of the leading trainers over there. And he was supposed to go down as trainer. They sent him over to me because my advice for foreign horses is you need to come over here and school. That I've seen horses ship over from Europe that run here and haven't jumped these fences, and they jumped them too big and spent too much time on them. So I've had him for about a month that he was going to run in Richard Newman's name, but then the workman's comp issue came in and all that, so they said, can you run in your name? I said, that's, you know, I've had him, that's fine. Very cool horse, very good rider coming over to ride him. Sam Tristan Davis is one of the leading riders over there. You know, he's won over 1,000 races. He's a very good rider.
That's interesting, though, that you say the jumpers, it's a little bit of a different game over there, so they have to kind of reorient when they come over here?
Yeah, we have a different, their hurdles are smaller than ours, their chase fences are bigger than ours. They look a little different, so they just, you know, if they've been running over chase fences, they spend too much time jumping the fence, too much energy jumping the fence, and you want them just to go down through it. So I think the little bit of schooling really helps them a lot.
Interesting. All right, let's go through the others. Hinterland coming in off a nice second place finish last time. Three starts so far this year with that second place finish. Mike Mitchell has been on board. He's riding another one of the horses in the race. But Hinterland, your thoughts on that one?
Hinterland, so he's 11 years old, but he's a really cool horse. And I've had him for, I don't know, 5 years. He's run some big races. He hasn't won. But he was like second at Belmont twice. I think he was second at the Iroquois. He's, you know, if I could choose one to win, it would be him just because he's a cool old horse.
And that's part of the story of these steeplechase. 11 years old, you see him go on, and as I say, a lot of these are flat horses having a second career, and to see horses, you know, up in 7, 8, 9 years old is not unusual.
He might be running out of time, but
at 11, but it'd be that would be a great story just to see him win as well. Pepe Le Pew, another
European import. By Jill Johnston and Danny Mullins again. He's another very good Irish rider that wants to come over here and ride him. That I do go off the ratings that he is rated below Von Romanet by like 20, which is significant. But you never know.
Yeah, you got to be in it to win it,
yeah,
as they
exactly,
say.
Exactly.
The ratings over there, they take it a little more seriously over there in that the winter is kind of a bona fide jump season over there. So they rate all the horses?
They rate, and they have, you know, it's kind of like the handicapping over here, that they handicap horses in big races. And those guys, they know what they're talking about. At least the horse that I purchased from there that you think you'll improve or whatever, no, they know what they're talking about.
And let's take a look at one more. You have four. Mike Mitchell on board this one. Gibbifaro.
At least that's the way I pronounce it. I don't know.
I'll let you go with it.
Or we call him Gibby.
I like that. Go with that one.
He's run well over here. The last race at Iroquois, he ran terribly.
Had a win right before that.
Yeah, but he was a novice, so lesser company. So I throw him with the big boys, he gets killed. But it was a little bit soft that day. He's run on soft ground, but not that kind of soft, and I'm just hoping that it was the ground. He loves firm ground. You'll notice that he ran on one track that was hard, which is very unusual for us, that he won. So I think he will appreciate being up here, and I think he'll be tough.
Also notable, because every Wednesday, when we talk the steeplechase races up here, we bring in either Joe or Sean Clancy, River D.
Yeah,
Nom de Plume Sean.
Exactly.
So that'll be fun just to watch that one as well. Let's talk a little bit about some of your other horses. We're going to take a look here at this year's Iroquois, one of the better races on the jump scene early in the season. The winner will be Scorpiancer. No Scorpiancer up here, I'm assuming, at Saratoga. You're holding off until a little bit later in the season.
So in that race, I had Scorpiancer, and the horse who was third, Moscato, who I think Moscato probably should have won. He got stopped in the stretch. But for those horses, these are handicaps, and I hate giving away, a lot of weight to a good horse. So Scorpiancer Moscato, you'll see at Belmont. I know that's a handicap too, but it's kind of giving them a break. I find it difficult to run these horses all year long and keep them going. So I think breaks help them. So, it's kind of like I used to love buying horses from Canada because Canada, those guys used to stay up there. Now they go to the fairgrounds and everywhere else, but they used to stay up there.
That's interesting. You're right. Not all, though, because the beginning, and here we see Scorpiancer and the Iroquois, and it was a nice performance there. But you're right, because not all of them. We do the handicapping show, and the first couple of weeks at Woodbine, it is tough because a lot of them are coming off that layup from the season before.
Yeah. But, I think it does help keep them going. You watch the gray horse here, though. I mean, he's flying at the end. He got stopped early. But Scorpiancer, this is the second time he's won this race. Nice horse.
Yeah, and so we'll look for them a little bit later this year. Before we let you go, I wanted to touch on one of your other really nice horses and just let you remember that one because a Hall of Famer, the Eclipse Award winner in 2007-2008, and I pulled up the Equibase stats, and it's interesting because 33 starts, 14 wins, 5 seconds, 3 thirds, but the last 14 of those, 10 wins and 3 seconds. And in the 2008 season, an undefeated 5-for-5. Remember Goodnight Sure.
Yeah, well, Goodnight Sure I remember because he's still out in my field. I have a field in my house that has like 12 horses in it. And Sure fractured his ankle out in the field. I don't know how he was on holiday and fractured his ankle. But he's retired and he's out in the field and he's still the king of the field. He rules the field. And it's kind of cool when you have that many out in the field together. That the pecking order, I turn like a new one out there. I think they're really cool, and then they get the next morning they're with their heads down.
That's funny. Does it work out that way a lot? That the horse that's kind of the king on the track is the king in the pasture as well.
Yeah, it does.
And we talk about that a lot. It, as handicappers, you as a trainer and a rider maybe are more familiar. We talk about that a lot. That sometimes they come down the stretch, and it seems like a horse doesn't want to go by because they're more a follower, and some other horses are a leader. Is there that mentality?
It's definitely that mentality, yeah.
And as I say, some of them just seem a little camera shy and don't want to go by, and so they're kind of giving way to maybe the leader of the pack a little more.
I think that's why you see a lot of Blakers. I mean, to be honest with you, the horse I ran on Sunny Sight that won, I want to put Blakers on him because, and I wanted to put him on before the race because I think he wants to be more of a follower, just like you go. I'm cool back here.
He looked good on the rescheduled steeplechase on Sunday. Jack, again, appreciate the visit. We wish you a lot of good luck, not only this afternoon at Smithwick going forward as well. Again, you're having a great season so far, so I don't know how much luck you need, but we appreciate the visit.
We always need luck.
Jack Fisher, again, 4 in today's Smithwick, and he's having a really, really great 2019. All right, we'll take a break. Continue with Racing Across America right after this. Stay tuned.
No. on.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contests, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
Back to Racing Across America on this Thursday morning. Seth Merrill live on the backstretch, live with Anthony Mormino, back in from the handicapping show. But I thought we'd pull Anthony in, because to be honest, we had a jockey schedule, and jockeys are notoriously
busier than me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fact. There's workouts and whatnot. So
we appreciate when they can make it, but it's not.
We wanted to talk a little bit about PDJF Awareness Day, and so I'll remind people that Saturday there'll be an autograph session out behind the Jack Silk's room with a
great
donation
cause.
Suggested. And
great
Sunday
cause.
Night they have the karaoke over at Vapor. So,
when's the basketball game?
I think the 8th, if I'm not mistaken. The 8th.
What do you mean mistaken? It's probably the only thing on your calendar, smartphone.
I don't know. I was a little too far down the bench last year, which is fine, which is completely understandable. But I don't know whether the minute of playing time gets my juices going anymore. I may sit in the stands and root. As I say, it was fine.
Do you still play? But we don't see each other as often. It used to be 3 nights a week?
At least a couple.
Seth continued on with active sports. I took up golf. Good.
And Mike McAdam and I went out and played the last week of summer, probably last year. It was shortly after the meet ended. And I had not played at all last summer. And boy, it showed. I got my money's worth on the golf course.
How'd you hit them? Often. Often.
You got me there. All right, again, I wanted to bring you on because start of the meet we had Tom Amello on. He talked about his blog that will be on CapitalOTB.com, the website throughout the Saratoga meet. You also doing a blog. Talk a little bit about that. You're focusing on Del Mar.
Yes. Most would say I have that West Coast bias. So we're doing a summer series podcast each Friday and Saturday. And Fridays, I've always loved Friday at Del Mar because for us, the first post is at 7 p.m.
I'm right with you.
Years ago, Seth, as you remember, Fridays used to be 9 races here. You could relax, get a quick dinner, and tee it up for Del Mar at 7. Now it flows naturally into it. And then Saturdays, as you know, Del Mar is their summertime haven for Southern California racing, is a big day. And last weekend was their first Saturday of the meet. They, you know, Seth, it's funny how I tell my wife this all the time now. I'm 56 years of age, and a lot of my good memories, are deep ones, are almost 40 years old. And I say, you know, a lot is supposed to change in 40 years. My point being, Del Mar used to open about 1 week before Saratoga and run about 8 or 9 days after. It used to end on this Wednesday. It used to run the Del Mar Futurity the Wednesday after Labor Day. Well, now Saratoga opens up before Del Mar. My birthday's during the meet. I never thought that would happen. And they both conclude on Labor Day nowadays. So Saratoga opened up. We had a full weekend before they opened up. Del Mar opened up on Wednesday, and then they had a good Saturday of racing to kick off their meet.
So I
basically do a handicapper's report for people for Friday and Saturday's racing on the podcast.
So people, again, can check that CapitalOTB.com.
Down there, you click on it. Life is so easy
and
now.
And the website was updated. I sent an email to our man, Charlie, our IT guy, who did a great job updating the website. But all that stuff is very easy to find now on the new website, which launched opening day of Saratoga.
Fantastic.
Del Mar on my list, and with the fall meet now, I can get out there, although
yes.
I'm more geared towards the summer meet.
I still haven't
meet.
Been to the summer one.
I was going to ask.
Not yet.
And
multiple times.
You made the Breeders' Cup out there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will say this about people. First off, go. I mean, when they say where the turf meets the surf, I'm talking 200 yards. I mean,
that's why I want to go. That shot they show
every day.
Just right across the street.
There's a road, but it's great. They're post time. Other days at 2 o'clock, you enjoy the morning, get going, get over to the racetrack. I mean, the racing is not as high a quality day in and day out as Saratoga. Matter of fact, I think last week on the second day of the meet on Thursday, they ran 7. I mean, but for you to go out there with your friends or by yourself to walk into a racetrack, hardly any humidity, by the ocean, boy, I'm telling you, it is a great 5 hours. I've done the November, the Bing Crosby meet, and I've been told by people there there is a very different feel for the two, but it's a beautiful place. The Breeders' Cup, it was just crowded. It's a small racetrack, folks. You know, 1 mile circumference for the racing service, but the plant is, Seth, I'm telling you, 15 minutes to walk, and that's all there is. I mean, when you see the paddock and you see the horses going out onto the racetrack, you've seen 60% of the racetrack. So on any other day other than Pacific Classic Day or opening day, I always say this to people.
Opening day may be their big day.
It's bigger than the Pacific Classic Day, and Seth and I both love sports. It's usually the most well-attended sporting event. You go through all the baseball box scores. Nobody outdraws Del Mar's Wednesday opening day. It is a cultural happening, and I've asked my wife, our son now will be 13 the day after the Breeders' Cup, if you can believe that. But I want to go for their opening day. I've heard so much about it, but the summer meet is fantastic. Get to be there.
I'd
but
like
you should go.
There,
you,
yeah.
I know
like,
Seth's a long time. Seth
meet.
Likes the water. You should make a quick jaunt out.
That would be my game plan. A little beach in the morning, boom.
I tell you what, you know, if you want to go someday and you need somebody to sit in for the Racing Across America, I'd be happy to
be
for you to
front,
get out
I'd be
there.
On the front side smelling like suntan lotion because I would have been in the morning on the beach.
It's a tremendous.
Let me just hit on some stakes so
yes.
far. Opening day, the Oceanside, which many, many years has been a split division, but this year they got a nice field of 12. Jessican, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the favorite won that one. Mucho Unusual wins the San Clemente for the three-year-old fillies. Bowie's Hero wins the Eddie.
Well, one quick thing, Seth mentioned, out at Del Mar, their three-year-olds really turned their attention exclusively to turf racing. Unless you want to run
Derby.
The Pacific Classic. What's interesting is they each have, both sexes have a three-race series. The Oceanside, which 1 year was split three ways, is restricted to non-stakes winners. The San Clemente gets the fillies off graded stakes. Their whole series is nicely done. So they turn their attention, which is often why we get Southern California dirt horses in the summer, because they have no options at Del Mar.
That's a great point. We do sometimes in the Travers, Jim Dandy, you'll get the Southern California horses because, as you say, there aren't the same options out there on the dirt.
And on the opposite side, ours go out there for their
three-year-old turf division is a nice subdivision, and so it's fun. That Oceanside kicking things off, and then a little bit later, again, that Del Mar Derby. Eddie Reed was Bowie's Hero, and I think we pulled up the replay from last weekend.
San Diego?
The San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mentioned the Cougar yesterday.
Yes.
Won by Campaign, and I mentioned that because I think there's a couple of local people that are involved in that ownership group.
Who's listed on?
Woodford Grace. San Diego last weekend. Traditionally a prep for the Pacific Classic. Now, Catalina Cruz are a little more of a sprinter, but coming out of the race, they were talking about Pacific Classic is in their sights.
Well, Drew the Rail, my top pick on the podcast was Dr. Dora, who was the scratch out of here. And Seth, you know me, you know, doing the handicap report for a long time. 1-9, you know, looked like a winner the whole way. I'll be interested to see if they want to continue going forward. Because my question with Catalina Cruiser for them is, if you go to the Pacific Classic, so you're talking 10 furlongs in late August, what's your plans for the Breeders' Cup? The mile, the classic, the sprint. I mean, and just listening to trainers
because
through
it's
the years.
To go back
right.
A mile and a quarter.
If you get him to be at his A game going 10, I don't know where it leaves them. I mean,
really talented horse stuff.
Yeah,
so
I would
fun
be
fun to see what they do choose to
sure.
Do.
Like I know on I've heard Brian told me earlier that Mattioli is going to get back to sprinting. I mean, I know he won the Met Mile one turn in elongated sprint, but he's going to go back to sprinting. But Catalina Cruiser, he's put them in a very interesting spot because, Seth, as we know in America, and it's always been this way, distance of ground racing is usually more financially worthwhile than sprinters. Maybe they liked his effort at 1-9 at 8.5 furlongs and will want to go forward in the Pacific Classic later in the meet at a mile and a quarter.
Yeah, he was $2.20 to win
yeah.
in there. Some outclass rivals, Joel Rosario out to ride in that San Diego last weekend. So far, you know, we're barely into the Del Mar meet.
Yeah.
Anything stand out to you so far?
Well, a couple of years ago they went back to dirt, which you know, made Bob Baffert and many people very happy. The turf course changed years ago. It used to look like, and Dick Powell gave me this line, it used to look like they didn't own a lawnmower. I mean, the lawn guy, you look at some 1980s Eddie Reeds or such, it was completely different. Then they went to that pool table that Hollywood Park always had and Santa Anita had. And it's funny because I think in Southern California, and I know many of us public handicappers pull our hair out in New York, no pace. You will usually get pace in the turf racing there. The problem is, Seth, and you'll notice this when you go out there, with these one-mile racetrack circumference on the dirt, the stretch comes up immediately in turf racing.
Yeah.
But off-the-pace runners still have enough ability to get home on the turf racing, and on the dirt, speed is just king in California. It's almost always been that way. I think, Seth, it could be in New York if jockeys decided that they wanted to. I think they'd find out such an advantage in North American racing for early speed. But I like off the pace on the turf at Del Mar. Usually you get pace to run into. That helps them because I'm telling you, you look at the turf course there, you look up, you're like, my goodness, they barely can get rolling. And the line comes on the stretch. Off the pace on the turf and dirt, speed is very dangerous, which Santa Catalina, who I think only other start this year was the True North, sprinting
yeah,
in New York, then goes back out there to root. So interesting campaign. As you said, extreme, a lot of talent for that run.
And he'll be fun to watch,
yes.
Again, to see where they do choose to go. Let's shift gears a little bit. Saratoga underway, and also last weekend the Haskell down at Monmouth. Saratoga had the Coaching Club American Oaks on Sunday. I said on the weekend, or I said yesterday, with
yes.
Looking back at the weekend, I think both three-year-old filly and three-year-old male division kind of got the leaders they were asking for. A lot of people, even before the Haskell, were kind of feeling Maximum Security was on top. I was still a little dicey on that,
mm-hmm.
but I think with the Haskell, he clearly now is at the top of the division. And Guarana, with, you know, Serengeti Empress came out of the Kentucky Oaks with I think all kinds of question marks still. And so I think that.
Well, I think she's answered really one of the questions that she's going to the test.
Yeah.
Tom Mabee's doing a great job.
You know, calling out, and I think Guarana, lightly raced, but two grade ones and three starts. She's at the head of the class.
Interesting type of year. We probably get these once every, I don't know, 7 years or something where it seems to be very muddy. But now here's what I thought about Maximum Security. I was at a wedding in Philadelphia that the delay actually helped me at the Haskell. The nuptials were at 5, and it kind of helped me. But I don't think, I mean, because of the claim of foul and more confusion with him, I think he's on top. He's not my favorite three-year-old, but I think he has done enough. I wouldn't have taken him down either time, so to me, he's the one. Now, you're talking about Guarana. Boy, they were knocking a Coaching Club American Oaks winner pretty quickly, I thought. Now, it'd be interesting also, Chad Brown, where's she going next?
Alabama? I have Dave Grenig up next, so I was
okay.
Listening to some of his coverage, and he's said possibly the Cotillion skipping the Alabama.
Chad says not because of a mile and a quarter, more because of timing. Well, that's he knows.
But he hadn't
he's about
to
as
that.
Good
the
as timing.
Alabama as possible.
And then my guess would be, so my guess is the way race it, it's the Cotillion to the Breeders' Cup, so she would have one more race from July. But there's a lot of talent there. I mean, it won't happen, but I'd like to see her in the test, going one turn at 7/8. It should be pretty good.
Well, remember those days, the test you saw?
Oh, do I remember them? How much gray hair?
Speaking of 4 years ago, things haven't changed since. That is something you just isn't even remotely in the back of your mind these days.
Who was the last one to do it? Who was the last one to do it on 9 days?
Ooh. I don't know.
Go for one.
Oh, man.
Because the next year they went to 5 weeks. And Versailles Treaty, the test was the added Saturday, so she got the 2 full weeks. But go for Juan.
The best quick turnaround in my lifetime was probably the Met Mile to the Belmont Stakes, the Woody Stevens.
Monday to Saturday, Woodman.
And just turning around that quickly, again, something we will not see the likes of again, presumably. Well, because of the dates of the
race. Didn't Dutcho have the 3-year-old a couple years ago, ran third on Saturday and second on Sunday?
Yeah. Probably 10 years ago now.
Yeah, let's not have Mr. Grenning wait. You can keep me to the curb.
We will wrap things up. Again, folks, Friday.
Who is the jockey, by the way? No, you don't have to throw him under the bus. Don't throw him.
Fridays.
They do good work.
Fridays and Saturdays.
Podcast on the website.
When do they typically show up on the website?
Unfortunately, the gentleman who's in charge of that is off to our right. I don't know.
Well, the podcast.
When do they load up?
When do they show up normally?
They'll be up this evening.
Oh, okay.
Because I've already done it. We put it in the can. So
there you go.
Find it tonight.
Look for tomorrow's tonight on CapitalOTB.com. Anthony, thanks for the visit.
My pleasure.
All right, Dave Grenick, Daily Racing Forum, up next. We'll talk some stakes races coming up tomorrow and on the weekend. Stay tuned.
I figured you were going to go to...
Looking for a fantastic meal? Stop by Malcolm's, a unique farm-to-table restaurant experience. Located at 617 Union Street in Schenectady, Malcolm's offers locally grown fresh foods, mouth-watering flavors, an enhanced drink menu, and terrific service. Malcolm's is a sure bet during Saratoga season. Make your reservation today.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Thursday morning, that means a visit, a rotating visit, from either Mike Welch or Dave Grenick. Mike was last week, Dave this week. Dave, good morning.
Seth, how are you?
Thanks for stopping by. Before we get to some of the stakes action for tomorrow and Saturday, nice stakes card on Saturday, including the Jim Dandy. Pulled up some of your work on DRF.com last night, and again, folks can find Dave in the hard copy or on the website. Thundersnow in town working for the Whitney, and I noted in the article, too, it looks like McKenzie will show up for the Whitney.
Yeah, I think the Whitney's going to come up a pretty solid race. May not be the biggest field in the world, but it's going to be solid. Thundersnow arrived here on Monday. Went to the track yesterday after clearing quarantine. Was back on the track this morning. Scheduled to breeze on Sunday, and that'll be his one and only work for the Whitney. I thought he ran a very respectable race in the Met Mile. He finished just behind McKenzie, who was expected. Actually, I think he worked yesterday, and he's supposed to fly in here on Tuesday for Mr. Baffert. And then Preservationist, who won the Suburban. Initially, Ginny was talking about skipping it and going into the Woodward, but they're going to run the Whitney as well. So you got three really solid horses.
Oh, that's interesting, because he really was in the winner's circle right after the race. He really was kind of thinking, Woodward's more in my...
They waited a long time on this horse, and I don't think they want to wait any longer. Yeah. He's sound.
The iron is hot.
Yeah, he's healthy, he's sound, he's running great. Well, you don't want to skip a race like the Whitney.
Code of Honor, not in the Jim Dandy this weekend. You noted they're looking to train up to the track.
Yeah, you know, the Dwyer to the Jim Dandy's only 3 weeks, and I think what Shug was thinking, if I run him in the Jim Dandy, then I might not have the horse I want for the Travers. So the horse has shown a propensity to run well fresh. He did so in the Dwyer coming off the Derby. He did so, I think, in the Fountain of Youth. It's a smart thing to do. He's not a very big horse, so they're just going to take their swing in the Travers.
And we were just talking with Anthony Marmito about the three-year-old division, the fillies and the males, which I think solidified this year, and you had some follow-ups on both of those. Guarana, I referenced your article. You talked to Chad. He may go to the Cotillion and bypass the Alabama, although it didn't sound like a sure thing. And Maximum Security, you had quoted Jason Service. Doesn't sound like a sure thing for the Travers, although that's kind of the goal if he's doing well.
Yeah, we'll go with Guarana first. You know, she's now won the two grade ones with good spacing between her races. She's lightly raced. I'm not so sure that the mile and a quarter doesn't factor in here a little bit. He says no, but I think at this stage of the career, her career, there's a grade one worth more money in, at Parks with more time. If he wins that one, if she wins that one, there's three grade ones. She probably puts her at the top of the division. Oh, by the way, he has a nice horse that probably is maybe better suited for the mile and a quarter in Dunbar Road for the Alabama. I think he can do a nice job of spacing those, of separating those fillies out until they really have to run against each other, maybe the Breeders' Cup if they don't get that far. Maximum Security, the objective is to run in the Travers, but Service wants to make sure the horse is doing really well. The whole day at Monmouth was a mess in terms of the heat, in terms of the delaying of the race. So, you know, he wants to monitor the horse. The horse came out of the race a bit tired, which you would expect. Everybody, I think, who was at Monmouth Park that day came out tired, equine and human. And, you know, I think the horse is still at Monmouth Park. He wanted to get some fluids built, you know, into the horse, build some strength back up. And then I thought he was supposed to ship here tomorrow. It's still possible. I haven't, talking to the assistant, he was unaware of that. He thinks it might be next week, but I think if the horse is doing well, the Travers is the goal. I think Gary West would like to run in the Travers. Now, I know people say, well, he's got game winner for the Travers. Yeah, he can run more than one horse in the Travers.
So there's the updates on some of those horses and some more interesting three-year-olds on the weekend, Friday and Saturday. And let's start by looking at the Curlin tomorrow. Three-year-olds, and this is a restricted stake, three-year-olds which have not won a stakes race, a mile and an eighth, 100,000. Field of nine in here. Endorsed for Kieran is interesting. Jason Service brings in Direct Order. Highest Honors is kind of the other Chad, because I'm going to pull up an allowance victory back on June 22nd from looking at Bikinis. Second win in the second career start. Nice maiden breaker, and then a nice follow-up in this race. Looking at Bikinis as the number two horse. I just think, you know, he's coming in. Nice little bullet workout as well. I think folks are going to tilt in that direction. I haven't finalized my thoughts, but boy, looking at Bikinis looks pretty. I didn't mention Intrepid Heart from Todd Pletcher, but what are your thoughts on the Curlin?
Yeah, you landed on the one I thought was the one to beat, looking at Bikinis. If you go back and look at that race, you know, sitting right there, and then all of a sudden he gets shuffled back to like fourth or fifth.
And again,
has
he's
to
the
rally.
Two horse.
Right. He's close up here inside. He's, you know, Castellano's going to, you know, sit up back off what looks to be developing into a three-ply speed duel up front. Saving all the ground, and then, but you know, later on in the race, he gets a bit of a jackpot and gets shuffled back, and then has to go wide, and still made a very nice run. His other horse in here is also interesting. Highest Honor is the eight. If you go back, I watched that first race from that horse yesterday back in April in Keeneland. He's trying to rally up the rail, and he gets shut off big time, and goes outside, comes again, and only gets beat a neck. And then comes back with a nice allowance win against a nice horse in Meet Me in L.A., who came back and, while defeated, was put up to first. And I thought that was a solid effort. And I think Highest Honors, being with the pedigree there, definitely says wants to go a mile and a half. Going back to look at the Bikini, so here he's back to fifth here at the 3/8 pole, and he's getting back into the race, and he's going to go widest of all here. Castellano takes him the widest of all, and then he's going to just kind of gradually wear down the horse on the lead there. And I thought it was a solid race. I thought he wants, you know, it's an indication he wants to go further. this horse was being pointed to the Breeders' Futurity last year after the maiden win at Belmont Park. His last work was, he got injured in that last work, and it took a while to get him back to the races, but this was a good comeback race, I thought. The time was pretty good, too. I think it's like 140, or this was the mile. So solid time off the bench. Good, you know, probably got a world of education in this race. It's probably worth two races. But, you know, one point I did want to make, a lot of people sometimes get angst over, oh, why do you have the Curlin and the Jim Daniel back-to-back days? Last year was a perfect example of, like, you know, why? Because I think horses were cross-entered, three ran at one and five and another. But this year, I think it's a perfect example of why you do have it. This race is an allowance race. Yes, it's stakes. There's only one stakes winner in it. That's Cairo Cat, and he hasn't run in the stakes. He hasn't run since September. These horses need to run against these horses. And then tomorrow, Saturday, you've got all stakes winners in the Jim Dandy. Three or four of them are graded winners, and those horses need to run against those horses, and then come back at the end of the month, end of August. Keep forgetting what day we're at. End of August, and then all meet up in the Travers. And I think the seasoning that the horses that are going to get in the Curlin is going to help them be more competitive in the Travers than if they go against these horses tomorrow in the Jim Dandy.
Yeah, and a nice full field of nine again in the Curlin. All right, let's move on to Saturday. We'll get to the Jim Dandy in a moment, but let's start things out. We'll go in chronological order and take a look at the A.G. Vanderbilt. I had to pull up because I have been a fan of this horse going back to Oaklawn last year, but particularly this year. Matoli in the Met Mile. Now McKenzie makes a late run. A lot of people thought McKenzie may have been best, but Matoli got the jump and got it done. Matoli's the number three horse, McKenzie the number two, Thunder Snow the number four. Strike power is in Saturday in the Vanderbilt, who has gotten back to that form that showed the promise early in the career. Frenzy Fire, the Belmont Lover, had a little bit of a disappointment running fifth in the Met Mile last time. But, gee, to me, now maybe the one post position is a little bit of a knock, but Matoli just looks like kind of a monster in the sprint division at this point.
He is, but don't leave out Imperial Hint. I mean, this horse, I don't know if you find a more impressive performance than Imperial Hint winning the Vanderbilt last year. Now, granted, he wasn't facing against Matoli, but this horse, when right, is very, very good. And you know, he basically went into the Breeders' Cup last year as the favorite, not only for that race, but he was going to be the sprint champion. He had a dynamic year last year. This year it hasn't been as good. He came back with a kind of a dull third in the Pelican. I thought he ran okay in the Golden Shaheen in Dubai. Didn't get off very well, but if he breaks sharp, I mean, he's going to give Matoli a tussle up front, I could see. I'm with you, though. Matoli is a fabulous racehorse to me. He is it's either him or Bricks and Mortars right now for, you know, the top horse in the country. Now the thing with Bricks and Mortars is he's going to run the Arlington Million, and we may not see him again this year because they don't really have a race picked out for him. Matoli, we think, is going to be headed down toward the Breeders' Cup Sprint. But his Met Mile was tremendous. And I know, like you said, McKenzie, people say McKenzie might have been best. Now, Matoli took the heat through fast fractions and kept going and won the race. He was best.
Yeah.
McKenzie was second best, but he was good, but he wasn't as good as Matoli.
Yeah, a 108 buyer, too.
You don't see too many 32 and 3s. I mean, look, McKenzie and Thundersnow were second and third in that race, so we're going to show up in the Whitney next week. They're probably like, well, how fast do I have to run to win the Met Mile?
All right, let's move on to the Bowling Green. And again, another nice full field in here. In this one, and I could go a bunch of different directions. I mean, Saddler's Joy on a best effort can be a player. Channel Maker was the winner of this race last year. Yeah, Primo goes for Chad Brown on the move up from Chile. I am always taking a wait-and-see attitude on these South American horses, though. So I'll do the same there. But Focus Group for Chad Brown has shown flashes. But I'm going to pull up here the Belmont Gold Cup from June 7th. The winner will be Ahmad Ahmed.
However you want to say.
I'll go with Ahmed.
Ahmad Ahmed.
That one wins the three horse, and Arklow runs second. Now, essentially, the horse Arklow has started three times, but you draw a line through the first one, lost the rider. So what was essentially the comeback in the Man of War, I thought, was phenomenal. Second to Channel Maker. Off of that one off as the favorite in the Belmont Gold Cup. you know, 2 seconds now, maybe you look at that as being a little bit of a negative. I just think the horse might be primed in here. So Arklow, to me, is the interesting horse. But what are your thoughts on Bowling Green?
This, to me, I could think eight of them could win this race. And again, the wild card being your Primo. And I'm kind of with you. In a race like this, I might have to wait, take a wait-and-see approach to, you know, if he was coming in a bit of an easier spot, then maybe I'd say, yeah. But I will say this, Primo's training very well from what I've seen in the mornings here. I'm going to go, you know, I like bigger picture. I just hate the post 13. I mean, this horse has run 21. This horse and Sadler's Joy have both run each of the last two Bowling Greens. I think they were second and third 1 year, third and fourth another year. Bigger picture was won the Elkhorn two starts back at Keeneland over yielding ground. He was fourth to Hunter O'Reilly, who was supposed to run in this year's version, but got a bit of an infection and is going to miss it. But bigger picture always shows up. The one maybe exception, the Pan Am off the bench, but he was only beaten three lengths that day. But he 21 consecutive graded stakes is, I tip my hat to him, and he's $1.6 million in earnings. I just hate the post. His other horse, Mike Maker's other horse in here, Zulu Alpha, I think is live. He was second in the United Nations. A million ways to go here. I'll probably wind up with one of the two Makers and maybe see if there's anybody who comes out of this race.
Yeah, a very interesting edition of the Bowling Green. All right, let's move on to the highlight of the weekend. I think that's fair to say, the Jim Dandy, because clearly, as we've alluded to, this will lead into the Travers, and there are horses here that are very much players in that three-year-old division, which, as I said, I thought was searching for a leader. I think Maximum Security now at the top. But War of Will with the Preakness win, I think, adds another grade one, gets right up in the mix. Tacitus still needs, that grade one, but certainly has the talent. Tax has shown some flashes. Global Campaign has all kinds of promise for Stanley Huff. I'm going to pull up the Preakness, though. We'll look at number one, War of Will, winning over Dale's number 10, Everfast Owendale, another three-year-old I'd like this season. Number five runs third, but War of Will with the Preakness win, as I say, ran all the dances in the Triple Crown, Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, so has that going for him as well, if people are giving credit there, although we're looking at eighth in the Kentucky Derby and ninth in the Belmont, but they bookend the win in the Preakness, a win here in the Jim Dandy, maybe a win in the Travers, again, puts him in the thick of things for some Eclipse conversation. I'm probably tilting in that direction. I haven't really decided. It'll be either him or Tacitus, but again, Global Campaign, very dangerous. Your thoughts on the Jim Dandy?
Yeah, look, you do give credit to War of Will for being the only horse to run in all three Triple Crown races here. I did think he got a perfect trip in the Preakness Stakes, where the inside was decisively a better part of the racetrack to be, as you'll note. You'll note when Everfast gets second over Owendale, who I thought was I liked Owendale in this spot. But
I liked Owendale too.
You know, War of Will ran terrific in the Preakness. The Kentucky Derby, you don't know what was going to happen. He gets in that Mishigash with Maximum Security.
Belmont, he was going to be better than he was, but we don't know how much better.
Right. Yeah. And I thought he actually got back in the game and actually ran his race and kind of flattened out a little bit in the last part of it. Belmont, there's no, you know, Mark Cassie's using the old didn't handle the racetrack excuse. Okay. I guess we can take that to heart. But, you know, I'm sort of taking a little bit of a wait and see. Knowing the price is going to be short on War of Will, I need to see that he's clearly bounced out of the Triple Crown series with no ill impacts. I'm interested in Global Campaign. I think this is a horse that Stanley Huff was back training, didn't have to come back training, sort of did so as a bit of a favor to the Sagamore people who he knows. Saw some nice horses in here, this being one. I mean, you talk to Stanley about this horse, and, you know, he doesn't get too excited, but, you know, the tone of his voice doesn't, but what he's saying about this horse is just, you know, if you drink the Kool-Aid, and I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid, I'm going to give Global Campaign a shot. I mean, he was good enough to run off a layoff and beat a horse in Sir Winston, who was good enough to beat some of these horses that are in here in the Belmont Stakes. He's had some difficulties, had some foot issues. He got hurt in the Fountain of Youth with a foot problem, and even in the Peter Pan, he came out and burned his frog, the bottom part of the foot, and that's why he couldn't make. He wanted to run in the Ohio Derby and couldn't make that race. This became Plan B. Well, so did people forget the Peter Pan was Plan B. He was supposed to. He was entered in the Pat Day Mile on Derby Day, but that race was drew an overflow field, and he got stuck on the also eligible list and did not draw in. So he runs well fresh.
He's been successful around two turns. He's training very well. He's got a trainer that's very confident and I also think he's going to get a good trip. I think Tex goes to the lead. I think Global Campaigns is off of him. I don't necessarily think they go very fast. I think he gets first run on Tacitus and War of Will, and I'm going to hope that he gets the job done with Luis Saez, who, by the way, I think he won 5 stakes races last week.
Oh, really?
Obviously capped by the Haskell on Maximum Security. And I think a lot of jockey agents will be interested to watch this race, too, and see, hope Global Campaign does well, because Luis Saez probably has a Travers Mount if provided Maximum Security gets there.
So again, a nice edition of the Jim Dandy highlighting a nice stakes card on Saturday, Curlin on Friday. And just before we let you go, why don't we take a look at the Morrissey today? It's a field of 6, but I think it's a fun field. He Loves a Fight comes back on short notice after having won earlier at this meet. I thought, to me, it was between Celtic Chaos and Bill DeSuit. I do the picks on WTEN at night during the sportscast, and I said, looking at this race, I could have gone with either 2 Celtic Chaos or Bill DeSuit. I think they're evenly matched. I just went with Celtic Chaos on the recency. That one last raced and won in May, whereas Bill DeSuit last raced and won in January, but did it for Chad Brown. So I'm sure the horse will be ready. I just, as I say, slightly in favor of Celtic Chaos.
You know, my problem with Celtic Chaos is he needs a pace, and I don't know that he gets it in here. I don't see where the speed comes from.
You could.
I love Lulu to be as dangerous. I love Lulu's kind of inconsistent as far as the win end goes, but he looks like the lone speed in here to me. I guess Bill DeSuit's a little bit of the wild card, just from the standpoint of, he said he hasn't run since January. He got nice pace there, but he has been on the lead, back in 2017 and won a maiden race against State Breds on the lead. So just curious how they decide to run him, where they put him in the running of the race. I Love Lulu to me is dangerous as a potential lone speed. Bill DeSuit to me is probably the best, talented horse in the race. Celtic Chaos is a closer. And look, hats off to T Loves a Fight and the trainer Orlando Noda, who just in May claimed for $10,000 and has won 3 in a row with him. And for a guy who's just starting out on his own, it's a cool cool story there for that guy. And look, I'm glad to see the guy running back in 11 days. His confidence that the horse is doing well, and why not? You should strike while the iron's hot, as you said earlier.
Got him on the show tomorrow, and hopefully he has as much enthusiasm as he had in the winner's circle.
I was going to say, you might want to advise your viewers to turn the volume down, because he's going to get a little excited, especially if he wins.
Those are the fun stories.
Absolutely.
At the racetrack, so certainly easy to root for. And Goal for the King, I think, from Charlie Baker, could be a little bit interesting, too.
Another inconsistent sort, but has has one up here. And
the workout kind of says a little something, too, perhaps.
Yeah, I think I got snookered into one of those fast Charlie Baker workouts, and in the morning was better than he was faster in the morning than he was in the afternoon.
Dave, as always, appreciate the visit. Again, you can catch Dave's work, Daily Racing Form, the hard copy, or drf.com. Again, appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Seth.
All right, we'll wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. Thanks to Dave Grenig. Thanks also to Anthony Mormino. Again, you can catch his Del Mar podcast Fridays and Saturdays at CapitalOTV.com. And thanks again to Jack Fisher. That was a fun visit with him. The top steeplechase trainer in the nation currently, and 4 in the Smithwick this afternoon. And so, I'm being told we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to wrap things up. So that'll be the game plan. Stay tuned. I'll put a bow on it in just a minute after this break. We'll be right back.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
But here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Bob Bob. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a 3-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. We will wrap things up. I do want to remind folks, tomorrow the bounty bet returns well over a couple thousand dollars in the kitty. Take your shot. Late pick five at Belmont. Late pick five at Saratoga. You can play the late pick five at Belmont, but the payoff will be zero. And the bet won't cost you anything. But better to play the late pick five at Saratoga with your Capital OTB bet account, and you have a shot at the bounty. If multiple people hit, and again, you're only playing against people playing on CapitalOTBBet.com. If you're, if there are multiple people, you split a consolation prize. If you are the lone winner, you pull down the whole bounty. And again, it's over a couple $1,000. So that's tomorrow. Bounty bet at Capital OTB. Also want to remind you that tonight, the Andy Serling radio show, always want to tout that. I head down typically and check it out. And this week's guests for Andy down at the Parting Glass are Gary Stevens, Mike Maker, and Stanley Huff. Starts tonight, Parting Glass, downtown, 8 o'clock. Andy Serling and is at the Post Live radio show every Thursday night throughout the meet. Although Andy announced last week, Travers Week, he'll do it on Friday night, so keep that in mind. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. We appreciate your tuning in. Another great day here at Saratoga. So again, if you don't have plans, make them. Come on up here to the track. If things preclude that, don't forget you can stop by the Clubhouse Racebook and enjoy all the amenities there, your local parlor, or fire up Capital OTB Bet on your phone or your computer and play Saratoga that way, because there's a great afternoon of racing here. All right, back in tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock for Handicapper Support, 10 o'clock for Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You've been watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.